Hello, and welcome to the Heathrow results for the 3 months to the 31st of March, 2022. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question-and-answer session. And just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present John Hollingkay, Chief Executive Officer. Please begin your meeting.
Thank you, and hello and welcome to all who've dialed in to join our 2022 Q1 results presentation. I'm John Hollingkay, the Chief Executive, calling in live from Heathrow Airport. Joining me virtually are Javier Echave, the CFO, and Sally Ding, who's actually in the same room as me, who's our Director of Treasury and Corporate Finance. It's a good sign that we're getting back to normal, that we're now able to meet together without masks. Fantastic. Today, we'll present our key operational and strategic highlights, including progress on our ramp-up plan, a review of our financial position and outlook, which I'll ask Javier to take us through, and then we'll conclude by taking your questions. So let me start with an overview of our key metrics on slide four. Following an extremely challenging 2 years, I've been delighted to see the airport coming back to life across the first quarter. 9.7 million passengers traveled through Heathrow, in line with the forecast we set out in December last year. This supported growth in revenue to £516 million, and with operating costs of £243 million, our adjusted EBITDA for the quarter was £273 million, again, in line with our plan. While a positive EBITDA for the quarter is clearly encouraging, we are still operating well below the levels which cover depreciation of our assets and the cost of funding. Cumulative losses, therefore, continue to increase and now stand at £4 billion since the start of the pandemic. Despite this, our balance sheet remains strong, given our focus on maintaining cash and protecting covenants. Gearing ratios are now back towards pre-pandemic levels, and our liquidity position stands at £4.1 billion. From an operational perspective, we started to develop our ramp-up plan during the second half of last year in anticipation of the recovery. And although this was initially geared up to meet the summer peak, we've responded well to the quicker build-up of demand in recent weeks. While resources have been stretched at certain peak times, the operation has proved resilient, and we've worked hard with our Team Heathrow colleagues to ensure that passengers get on their way as safely and smoothly as possible. Overall, it has been a very solid first quarter across the company and provides the platform for what I hope will be a busy summer. Turning to slide five for a look at our strategic priorities. Our focus remains on operating a safe and resilient operation at a lower cost while providing an even better service to our customers. As demand returns, we're transitioning into the recovery phase, and we're working with all Heathrow partners to deliver our ramp-up plan to ensure that we are operationally ready to meet this growth. We submitted our response to the CAA's initial proposals in December, alongside an updated business plan. Our response to the CAA highlighted the material and basic errors in their analysis, which we hope will be addressed in their final decision. We believe that we can reach a settlement that allows us to provide a great service to passengers and a fair return to investors. On sustainability, we published our refresh strategy in February, Heathrow 2.0, Connecting People and Planet. This sets out new and more focused goals and targets. We are committed to building back from COVID as a stronger and more sustainable airport. And finally, although it may not be our immediate focus, the pandemic has strengthened the strategic case for expanding Heathrow. Moving to slide seven for an update on our traffic performance. We experienced a slow start to the year, given the continued uncertainty over Omicron, although this changed in March when the UK government removed all the remaining travel restrictions. As demand returns, we've seen a significant increase in passenger numbers and air traffic movements, although we're still around half the levels seen in 2019. Our cargo tonnage has remained stable and is only 14% down on 2019 levels, reinforcing our position as the UK's only hub airport and largest port. We're now seeing a reduction in cargo air traffic movements as passenger flights increase and replace freighters as the main mode of cargo transport. In terms of the mix of passengers, demand has been driven by outbound leisure, as UK passengers take advantage of countries being open and use travel vouchers from holidays cancelled during COVID to go abroad for the first time in 2 years. Europe and North America were the main markets, but although many of our key markets, such as Asia Pacific, remained closed or subject to restrictions. This leisure-led growth is also causing more volatility in passenger numbers and increased peakiness in demand. You can see that the range of daily passenger numbers across the quarter has been much wider than pre-pandemic, at nearly 120,000, with passenger numbers much higher over the weekend and during school holidays. Inbound leisure and business travel remain much softer, given travellers' concerns over the high levels of COVID in the UK and fears of testing positive before returning home. Slide 8 provides a snapshot of our key markets based on current travel requirements. The removal of all travel restrictions in the UK is a fantastic step forward and the first time that the UK has led the world in opening up. However, restrictions do remain in many of the markets we serve. Currently, around 40% of our markets have some form of travel restrictions in place, and a further 40% of markets are open to vaccinated passengers but require some form of pre-departure checks. This continues to hold back the speed of recovery, but also causes congestion at check-in as additional paperwork needs to be reviewed. Until we see all travel restrictions and pre-departure requirements removed, a full recovery in passenger numbers is unlikely to happen. Turning to slide 9, we provided a comparison on our traffic recovery relative to other European hub airports. Over the past 2 years, our traffic performance has been driven by the government's policy on travel. Coming into the pandemic, Heathrow was the largest hub airport in Europe. Given the more restrictive travel rules in the UK over the past 2 years and lack of access to the European market, we fell significantly behind our competitors. Now that the UK has opened up more quickly, it's allowed us to move back ahead. This is a really positive step, but we need to work hard to rebuild the global connections as more markets open up, so that we can restore our former leadership position. On slide 10, we look at how we are performing against our service standards. As we start our recovery, the things that matter to passengers in terms of service remain the same: easy, quick, and reliable journeys every time they travel. Over the quarter, the vast majority of passengers had a normal experience through the airport. I mentioned the ramp-up plan, which we started to develop last year, and I'm very pleased that we've been able to cope with the rapid growth in recent weeks due to good planning and delivery. We have seen some challenge in our operational metrics, particularly on departure punctuality, which was caused by a shortage in ground handler resource and staff absence due to COVID. We're working closely with our airline and ground handler partners to address this, given the criticality to the passenger experience. But overall, our service levels are still very strong, and we aim to get back to the high level of service passengers have become used to as we come out of the summer and demand returns to more usual levels. Slide 11 provides an update on our plan to ramp up operations. We're focused on delivering a safe and secure ramp up, centered on capacity, resources, and infrastructure. We recognize some of the challenges of check-in, particularly peak time, so we're working with the airlines to increase the use of automation to check documentation and reduce waiting times. On resourcing, we've scaled up our recruitment capability, and we are coordinating all of the employers across Team Heathrow to recruit and safely train 12,000 new starters across the airport. And in terms of infrastructure, we remain on track to reopen Terminal 4 by July. And I'm often asked why we haven't opened Terminal 4 earlier. But there's a fine balance here between increasing capacity, particularly for check-in, but not stretching already limited resource too thinly, for example, Border Force, which would be counterproductive and reduce service across all terminals. So we'll have Terminal 4 open by the beginning of July, and the first airline to move in is likely to be Qatar Airways. Given the terminal has been closed for 2 years, we're looking at this as if it were the opening of a new terminal. We want to ensure we have the right resource and structure in place so that when we reopen, we can provide the additional check-in and stand capacity while still maintaining service levels across all of our terminals. If we now turn to slide 12 for a regulatory update and key areas for investment. Our experience in recent weeks has reinforced how much passengers value safe, predictable and easy journeys through the airport. We've designed a balanced business plan for the H7 regulatory period, which is built on delivering these outcomes for consumers. We already have good standards for overall passenger service, for asset availability, peer service, security wait times, and those are recognised by passengers rating Heathrow one of the world's top 10 airports in the 2021 Skytrax survey. In H7, we're just seeking to maintain this level of service. But we're also investing in some of the consumer hotspots, particularly improving service for passengers who require particular support, as well as maintaining the COVID cleanliness measures so that passengers feel confident that the airport will be clean and safe. After 2 years of underinvestment, we need to restart and scale up our capital investment program. We've identified a range of projects which will improve service and resilience and improve cost efficiency. We will need to invest in replacing the Terminal 2 baggage system. The current system, which is based in Terminal 1, is 50 years old already and increasingly will face reliability issues, and that will help to improve our resilience. We'll also need to invest in new security scanners in all terminals, a major challenge in a live operating environment, but a requirement to meet the DfT's mandate by June 2024. This will actually improve passenger service by allowing everyone to keep liquids and laptops in their bag and deliver some of the operating cost reductions in our plan through higher flow rates. From an efficiency perspective, we will also focus on simplifying and digitizing aircraft passenger baggage and planning processes to improve the predictability and reliability of the passenger journey. And finally, we plan to invest in our retail and digital offering and our strategy to decarbonize aviation. Without this critical investment in the coming years, the recovery will be slower and passenger charges will be higher. So let's now take a look at our business plan and next steps for H7 on slide 13. Our focus is on reaching a fair settlement, and we've developed a business plan that balances the interests of consumers, airlines and investors. The experience over the first quarter has also demonstrated that we have the right plan. The CAA's initial proposals were built on an assumption that we could operate the airport this year with a cost base of around £180 million less than in 2020. We always knew that this was completely unrealistic. Trying to meet that budget now would have meant limited resource, longer queues, and more frequent delays as we recover from COVID. From a financing perspective, our plan delivers a minimum level of cash flow to maintain an investment grade credit rating, ensuring we can access debt markets efficiently to fund the business. And we've seen from the rating agencies in the past 2 months just how critical cash flow will be. It is clear that they view the midpoint of the CAA's proposal as the minimum floor for Heathrow to be financeable. Our plan results in charges of £42 per passenger for H7. Now, we've seen that the market has already absorbed the increase in charge to £30, and we think a further increase of just over £10 can also be absorbed. It is relatively small compared to the overall ticket price, many of which have increased significantly since the start of the year, and actually only adds less than 2% to the average price. If you have tried booking any flights recently, particularly long-haul flights, you will know that this is a fraction of the increase in charges that the airlines have been pushing through. We also have the opportunity to bring the charge down to £34, close to the current level, by deferring regulatory depreciation. We believe our shareholders may be willing to accept a deferral, provided they were guaranteed that it could be recovered during H8 and have the confidence that all efficiently incurred capex will be recovered, which is the cornerstone of the functioning regulatory system. The CAA's decision not to suspend depreciation over the past 2 years effectively means that 10% of the regulated asset base has now been disallowed despite being efficiently incurred. If this is not appropriately addressed, it risks future investment and our ability to provide sustainable levels of charges, service, and resilience. We've been continuing discussions with the CAA on our plan over the past 3 months and now await a final decision in the coming weeks. And finally, slide 14 provides an overview of our updated sustainability strategy, Heathrow 2.0. We set out our new plan in February, building on the previous strategy which we launched 5 years ago. And our ambition is for 2019 to have been the year of peak fossil fuel carbon at the airport. By 2030, we plan to cut carbon from flights by up to 15% compared to 2019, and to cut carbon on the ground by at least 45%. I'm delighted that our incentives to support 0.5% of sustainable aviation fuel out of total fuel use at Heathrow was fully subscribed to by airlines for the whole of 2022. Because of this, I think it's the case that more SAF will be used at Heathrow this year than at any other major airport. And I'm proud that we are leading the way in transitioning to SAF across the aviation sector. As we accelerate the use of SAF, we are also pushing the government through their new Jet Zero policy to introduce a price stability mechanism to close the price gap with kerosene and to introduce a mandate for 10% SAF by 2030. The more that the UK can lead the way in decarbonising aviation, the more we expect the rest of the world will follow. In terms of making Heathrow a great place to live and work, we've successfully transitioned all of our direct supply chain to receive at least the London Living Wage, and there are over 12,000 new skills job vacancies across the airport. This enables our closest neighbours to share in the benefits and success of having the UK's hub airport on their doorstep. So I will now hand over to Javier to talk about our financial performance and the outlook for the year. Thank you.
Thank you, John, and hello to everyone. I hope you and your loved ones are keeping safe and well. And I will now share an overview of our key financial performance with you starting on slide 16. So with passenger numbers growing to 9.7 million in the quarter, our revenue increased to £516 million. As we communicated in our full year results, we are investing in recruitment and the ramp up of operations, which meant that operating costs increased by 31% to £243 million. Overall, this means that it resulted in adjusted EBITDA increasing to £273 million in line with the overall financial forecast for the year, which we set in our January investor report. Our loss before tax was £191 million, and as John mentioned in his introduction, we continue to operate at a level below that is required to cover the depreciation of assets and cost of funding. Cumulative losses now since the start of the pandemic increased to £4 billion. Capital expenditure increased in year by around 42% to £74 million as we start to reinvest in our operations. Our balance sheet remains strong and we saw an increase in cash flow from operations to £278 million, driven by the growth in EBITDA. Net debt remains broadly flat at the group level, with increasing cash offset by increase in accretion as inflation remains high. Let's now take a closer look at the details, starting with revenue on slide 17. Overall revenue for the period increased to £516 million. Aeronautical revenue increased to £326 million, driven by higher passenger numbers and aircraft movements. Apart from that, retail revenue increased also to £101 million. And as demand has been driven by lesser travels, we are currently seeing passengers arrive earlier at the airport and spend more in shops and across our food and beverage outlets. We expect this will normalize after summer as we see a return to a more usual mix of passengers. As traffic recovers, we continue to take steps to optimize our retail revenue and minimize the impact of COVID and the government's decision to remove tax-free shopping. During the first quarter, this included extending the click and collect offering, welcome new food and beverage outlets in our terminals, and reopening additional car parks to meet the increasing demand. Finally, other revenue increased to £89 million, with both other regulated charges and Heathrow Express income increasing in line with traffic. Now moving to cost on slide 18. Overall, operating costs were up 31% on the year to £243 million and reflects the delivery of our ramp-up plan. Going component by component, first, people cost increased by 32% versus 2021, mainly due to additional recruitment and training and the end of the furlough scheme. The increase in operational and maintenance results from the reopening of operations compared to last year when we were operating with only one runway and two terminals. Utilities and other costs increased by 31%, given the impact of higher energy prices and inflation. And we expect inflation will continue to impact our cost base in the coming months. As we increase headcount, we expect to see further pressure on people costs. Certainly, some operational contracts are also due for renewal later in the year, which will be impacted by higher retail price index. Although we have in place a pay deal for 2022, we are engaging with our unions, and we will be having constructive conversations with them in the coming weeks. We are, of course, conscious of the growing cost of living crisis, and we look to balance this alongside the fact that we are still currently a loss-making business. Slide 19 provides an update on how we are now investing ahead of growth. And obviously, this change in focus can be seen in our cash burn. During the past 2 years, we kept a very tight control over operating costs and capital expenditure. But since the middle of last year, we have been increasing cash burn ahead of the recovery. We are actively recruiting over 1,000 new security officers for our own team, with many more vacancies across our supply chain. As I have mentioned in previous quarters, a large proportion of the cost savings we realized over the past 2 years were temporary, such as the furlough scheme, colleagues' pay reductions, and the consolidation of our operations. We have seen OPEX increase in the first quarter and with significant pressure through high energy prices and general inflation. We expect OPEX to be almost back to 2019 levels this year in real terms. Capital expenditure will also increase as we start to catch up on the £1.1 billion of underinvestment from the past 2 years. And interest paid will step up as we see a lower benefit this year from the swap reprofiling program we completed back in 2020. The benefit of this reprofiling that we have seen over the last 2 years will start to reverse from next year, 2023. Although we have managed the program to ensure that the additional costs are spread prudently over the next 2 regulatory periods. We still retain a very robust liquidity position, which provides flexibility as we move through the recovery phase. Continuing with our strict focus on cash flows on page 20, as you can see in the chart, over the year, net debt at the Heathrow SP level increased slightly to £13.5 billion. The net cash flow for operations of £278 million was offset by CapEx spend, external interest paid, and an increase in accretion on our inflation-linked bonds and swaps. At the end of March, we ended the trigger event at Heathrow SP, which had been in place since 2020. This allows us to reallocate liquidity across the group to ensure we have sufficient buffers of liquidity across the structure. In March, we made an intercompany payment of £110 million to Heathrow Finance, increasing the cash position at that level to over £300 million. No payments have been made to external shareholders, and that will remain the case until our Heathrow Finance gearing is back below 87.5%. From a funding perspective, our plan remains to raise £500 million of term debt across the year, and we will look to refinance our revolving credit facilities at the right time. We priced a private placement in March for £200 million, and I would like to thank our investors, yourselves, for supporting us with that transaction. Huge thank you. The regulatory overhang caused by the delay to the H7 settlement, particularly in terms of the potential impact on our rating, continues to be extremely unhelpful from a financial planning perspective. We have been crystal clear for years that an investable Heathrow supported by a strong regulatory model provides the foundation for minimum cash flows, solid investment-grade credit ratings, and our ability to access capital markets efficiently and economically. A recent report from one of the two agencies rating us cannot point more clearly to exactly the same issues. Our senior and junior debt are currently on credit watch negative, and our investment-grade rating is conditional on H7 charges and the introduction of an effective traffic risk-sharing mechanism. The gap between our proposed charts and what credit agencies independently set as a minimum is immaterial when compared with overall ticket prices, evidencing that the outcome for consumers is really in the hands of the CAA. So in summary, for similar levels of pricing, the CAA can either enable a virtuous circle that leads to better service, faster recovery, and lower charges, or a vicious cycle where higher charges and inability to fund our operation efficiently would condemn Heathrow to the challenges that other UK airports have just faced due to the constraints in resourcing. Moving to slide 21 to look at our gearing ratios, our regulatory asset base increased to £17.7 billion, primarily because of inflation. Combined with the actions taken to manage our net debt, gearing ratios are returning towards pre-pandemic levels. While the headroom to gearing trigger events at Class A and Class B remains comfortable, gearing at Heathrow Finance remains slightly above 87.5%. As a reminder, the Heathrow Finance gearing covenant has now been restored to 92.5% following the end of the amendments to the covenant agreed under the previous year's waivers. Turning to slide 22, we provide an update on our traffic forecast for this year. John described the current dynamics, and given the strength of short-term demand, we have revised our traffic outlook from 45.5 million to 52.8 million passengers. As mentioned earlier, we have seen strong demand in recent weeks as consumers take advantage of the removal of travel restrictions and the opportunity to travel for the first time in 2 years. We expect this leisure-led demand to continue through the summer, with demand increasing to 73% of 2019 levels in quarter three. However, we do believe that the short-term outlook remains volatile, particularly in respect of overall capacity to meet the demand across the sector. We will therefore continue to monitor the position closely, and we will provide a further update as part of our June investor report. Moving to our view in the medium term on slide 23, while short-term demand is strong but volatile, we believe that medium-term outlook is highly uncertain. Our view is that the outbound leisure-led demand will slow significantly after the summer, and we will be faced with some significant structural challenges later in the year. For example, a new COVID variant of concern, the impact of higher cost of living, lower GDP growth, and the uncertainty over the war in Ukraine all have the potential to significantly slow down the speed of recovery. Geopolitical events have impacted our traffic before, and we know that inbound travel from the US, our key market, is currently held back by COVID, and this is likely to remain should the war in Ukraine continue. We therefore remain cautious on the medium term and still see a return to 2019 levels being several years away. So finally, and to summarize our outlook on slide 24, we have updated our traffic forecast to 52.8 million passengers in 2022. We will provide a fuller update alongside a revised financial forecast in our June investor report. Also, we will keep you posted in our H1 results, which will be released on the 26th of July. So with that, I conclude the financial review and hand back to John for closing comments. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you, Javier. So our vision remains to give passengers the best airport service in the world. We are back to focusing on our four priorities, which are a sort of balanced scorecard by which we manage the business. We are a service business, and service is delivered by our people. So Mojo, or making Heathrow a great place to work, is our first priority. And this year, we'll be focusing on improving facilities for colleagues, as well as well-being and mental health after an extremely stressful 2 years. And we'll also invest in recruitment, training, and development to support internal promotions, which will help to meet our commitments on career opportunities for local people and on diversity. Transforming customer service will focus on maintaining service standards with improvements for passengers who require support and starting to improve punctuality and flow of passengers, planes, bags and cargo. Feed the Plan will focus on providing capacity ahead of demand during the recovery phase, as well as securing a fair bet settlement from the CAA for H7. And sustainable growth will focus on delivering Heathrow 2.0 and in particular net zero aviation and starting to plan for the restart of our work to expand Heathrow. So we're now very happy to take any questions you might have and I'll hand back to Nazanin to coordinate. Thank you.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. You can also submit your questions in the Q&A section of the WebEx at the bottom right of the screen, or if you wish to ask a question through WebEx audio, just click the raise hand button in the bottom right of the participant panel. And please click to lower your hand after your question has been answered. So we have some audio questions. The first one is from Jonathan Cowley from PIC. Please go ahead.
Hi there, guys. Yes, this is John Cowley here from PIC. Thanks for taking my questions. I just wanted to just ask around 2 points, if I may. Firstly, relates to the kind of changes to the slot usage rules from the end of March. Just kind of wondering if you have seen any kind of impact from those rule changes over the last few weeks, particularly I suppose in light of kind of market share versus Gatwick Airport, please. And secondly, I just had a question on the CAA H7 outcome. One, when can we expect to hear the kind of final outcome on that one, please? And then two, can we just get a kind of flavour really around, I guess, how those discussions are kind of progressing and if they are kind of responsive to the RAB adjustment proposal which you talked about today. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, John. Let me pick up the first of those around slot rules, and then perhaps, Javier, I can ask you to pick up the question on H7 timetable and where we are with discussions. So in terms of slot rules, we've seen the airlines publish a full schedule for flights after the beginning of the summer season. And since then, we've seen them making cancellations against that schedule, partly to reflect changes in markets. Russia would be an obvious example of that. Partly also to reflect constraints on capacity. And you'll have seen a number of airlines, not just British Airways, making cancellations in advance to better align supply and demand within their networks. We have heard from the airlines requests, given the uncertainty that we have talked about today, to remove the 70-30 slot rule for the summer season. That currently is not something I think the government is planning to go ahead with, but I think it does reflect the uncertainty that we all face. We've updated our forecast today and increased it, but we have to recognize that the outcome could be better than we have presented, or it could be worse than we have presented, given all the potential headwinds that we have talked about. And we're all in this together with the airlines. We don't want them to be flying slots that that are going to be empty. That typically doesn't happen here at Heathrow, but nor do we want them to forego any market opportunities that might occur. What we're seeing typically with any changes to the schedule is that it's normally happening on a relatively short-term basis, so making any cancellations a month or so out. That reflects the fairly tight balance of supply and demand that the airlines are seeing. Quite late booking in some cases, so uncertainty over what the demand will be. And I think that is going to continue over the balance of the summer season. So I can't really give you much more flavor than that, but we will update you when we next update the markets. In terms of the CAA, let me hand over to Javier to update on timing and the nature of our discussions. But you'll appreciate the CAA keeps their cards very close to their chest, so we have little insight really into their overall thinking.
Right. Thanks, John, and thanks, Jonathan. I think in terms of your two questions on CAA, so first of all about process. So as you know, there has been a lot of ping-pong between us and airlines and CAA over the last few months. So the last is, obviously, we submitted our five-year business plan in 2020. We provided an update in June 2021. The CAA replied to that in their initial proposals back in October 2021, and the latest is that we responded to that initial proposals back in December 2021. So the saga continues, and now what we expect is around June, the CAA will share their final proposals. Those final proposals are to be consulted again, so we will have a period of 6 to 8 weeks to respond to that consultation before it becomes a final decision by the CAA in the autumn. It should be around October, November. So that's from a timing perspective where we are. And obviously, once the decision from the CAA is final, the process might not stop there because both us and airlines would have the right to consider an appeal to the Competition Markets Authority, which could take another few months. So as you can see, we are still a couple of months ahead, away of final decision. In terms of responses, John mentioned that obviously at the end of the day, what matters is what the CAA says in the final decision. We have a very constructive working relationship with the CAA. We are meeting them frequently. We are providing as much information as they need to really make their difficult judgment, which we recognize. But I think overall, I think we are just waiting for that. Obviously, the fact that there are a couple of things that has happened over the last few months. Obviously, first of all, they have seen the impact in consumer demand based on pricing. Hopefully, you would agree that that hasn't materially changed that. So some of the concerns from airlines about and the CAA about impact of pricing in demand hasn't taken place. The second is that they have seen how we have performed over ramp up, and actually we have responded responsibly. But also, if we would have followed the plan from the CAA, we wouldn't have been able to cope with demand, and that would have meant significant chaos in our terminal. So obviously, the CAA is well aware of that. And then probably finally and importantly, obviously the CAA has heard directly from one of our credit rating agencies, what would be their assessment. Until now, the CAA has been speculating about financeability, but at the end of the day, what matters is what the credit rating agency has to say. And they have been crystal clear, as John mentioned. The midpoint of the CAA cannot be a midpoint, must be a floor. And therefore, anything below to that put our financeability at risk. And at the end of the day, financeability at risk, the one who really will pay for that is consumers, not necessarily investors, not necessarily creditors or shareholders in the medium term, but actually will be investors. So we keep engaging with them, and obviously we'll have to wait until final proposals in June, and obviously we'll keep you posted in the investor report and in next results presentation at the end of July.
Okay, great. Thanks both for the very detailed responses. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And before we move on to written questions, we have one more audio question from Paul Dew from Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Hi, and thanks very much for the presentation. That was very helpful as always. Hi, John. I think you answered a few of my questions, but I think I can find three. Just on the funding, I think you mentioned $500 million this year. How should we think about kind of the cash balance that you'll run going forward? I think you're at a slightly elevated level versus history, so just wondering how we should think about the cash balance going forwards. You mentioned in the kind of autumn, winter season, you're seeing some capacity cuts. Just wondering kind of if you can provide any color exactly kind of what you're seeing, and also I assume that's baked into the current kind of forecasts as 4Q looks a little bit lower. And then the final one is, as we get past the cash lockups, obviously we're past that now kind of at the SP level, but as that removes at the Heathrow Finance level, how should we think about kind of future dividend policy and when that would come back in? Thank you.
Well, thank you. Those are really good questions. Let me share them out a little bit. I'll perhaps ask Sally to pick up the question on funding and the cash balance. And then perhaps, Javi, you can talk about cash lockups and dividends at Heathrow Finance. I'll pick up the autumn winter capacity cuts. And I suppose overall, I'd be cautious about reading too much into capacity cuts in the autumn and winter. It really is too soon to be able to be definitive about that. What we're typically seeing is a pattern of passengers booking fairly late and airlines making schedule changes fairly late. And we're just starting to see some schedule changes coming in for the autumn season. So that's something that we are going to be keeping an eye on, and it's consistent with an element of caution about the market as we come out of the summer and some of the headwinds that we have been talking about. But as soon as we know more and have a clearer view on the autumn, then we will give you an update. But that might not be before the July half one results, when we should have a slightly better sense of what we're expecting to see. And just to give you a sense for the operating approach we're taking, given the uncertainty, we are trying to scale up all of our resources across the airport to meet the maximum level of demand we can envisage. We don't want to turn away any potential passengers. We want to be ready to serve demand if we do come in on a higher forecast. So we don't want to be in the way of passenger growth. On the flip side, we have to be more realistic about our financial forecasts. If you only create a financing plan based on your best possible outcome, then our experience over the last 2 years is you're doomed to disappointment. And given the fragility of the market, that would be an irresponsible thing to do in our view, which is why we've based our financial planning on a more balanced view of the forecast, which we've updated today. But when we do our stress testing, we're looking at potential downside scenarios as well to make sure that we have a robust financing plan and liquidity in the event that we do face a worst-case outcome. And that has to be a realistic possibility, and I don't have to tell anyone in the credit world that you always have to be worrying about the downside. But when we look ahead, we've had three major waves of COVID. We're potentially overdue a fourth wave, particularly given how widespread COVID now is in the community, not just in the UK. And of course, vaccines that have been the gateway to getting our lives back again are now starting to lose their effectiveness. And so we face the possibility of a fourth wave with limited vaccine protection. And that has to be a realistic possibility that we can't rule out, which is why we've taken quite a balanced view for our base plan and a worst case for our business protection plan. So I hope that is helpful. Let me ask Sally to pick up on the funding and cash balances, and then have you to pick up on the dividend question.
Thanks, John. From funding and cash perspective, we have maintained a very strong liquidity pool. As you said, you know, we do have strong cash position to maintain the liquidity. We do see us the liquidity position going into the 2025 in our base case. In the future, we have said to the market that we will continue to maintain 24 months liquidity horizon going forward, which will provide us sufficient headroom to be able to deal with any sensitivities and downside scenarios. From funding perspective, we have about 500 million Class A funding. We have been and will continue to be a regular issuer in the debt capital market in order to maintain our presence and also make sure to maintain the liquidity of our curve across the market.
Right, thank you, Sally. So I think in terms of dividends, Paul, obviously that will be a decision that our board will make at due course. But as you mentioned, I think that once we get out of trigger red, which we did in March, I think we have now complete freedom to move cash between Heathrow SP and Heathrow Finance. Obviously, we have mentioned very clearly, and we have mentioned over the last few months that obviously we will not return to dividends until Heathrow Finance operates below 87.5% gearing. We are not far from there, not to 6 percentage points in terms of below that. So from there, I think that obviously we will recommend to distribute dividends as soon as it's safe to do so. There are a couple of big variables that are still to be clarified, so traffic reserve mechanism, level of charges, protection of rating, and so on and so forth. But obviously, as a matter of principle, we will recommend to distribute dividends to our board as soon as it's safe to do so, recognizing also that we are extremely grateful of how shareholders have supported us over the last 3 years. Some of the liquidity that we have in place is equity that shareholders chose to left in the organization before there. So we are very grateful for the responsible support that they have given us, but also we acknowledge that they have to also deliver to their investors. So as soon as it's safe, we will recommend to our board, and it will be for our board to choose the policy going forward.
Thanks, Javier.
Thank you very much.
I have some written questions. I don't know if you'd like to read them out, or should I?
Why don't you read them out? And
sure.
And so I can pretend I haven't read them.
Yeah, absolutely. The first one is from Miguel Medina, who's asking, you have revised your traffic forecast for 2022. Have you also revised 2023 and 2024 forecasts? And do you still expect to recover 2019 levels in 2025, if I recall correctly? Thank you.
Great. Good question. Not a question I can answer at the moment. We are updating our forecast. It's quite a complex model that we use that has actually been very robust over the last couple of years. So it's taking us a while to go through and update that market by market. But we will update our forecast if there are changes when we publish our investor report at the end of June, and we'll show what the consequences of that are. I think overall, I'd say that 2025 feels about the right kind of time for getting back to pre-pandemic levels of travel. And if you think about the conditions that we've talked about, we need to see all of the COVID restrictions here and internationally removed, and the removal of the fear of new restrictions coming in before we start getting back to 2019 levels. And I think given what we can see happening in places like China at the moment, it feels like we're still quite some way away from that. For those of us living in the UK, it feels like everything has got back to normal and anyone can fly anywhere. But as you will know probably more than anyone on this call, if you're living in other parts of the world, that really isn't the case. And it'll just take us a while to get back to where we were. But we'll keep an eye on that and update as soon as we can. One thing I should say, I've had a few questions from journalists today saying, aren't you just being too pessimistic with your forecasts? Well, when you look back over the last 2 years, you might remember that we have always been the most pessimistic of all the major forecasters for aviation, but we've always been more optimistic than the actual results that we got. So I think it's right to be cautious still. We're not out of the woods yet by any means. We do have some serious headwinds facing us, but we have to work on the basis that we need to be able to make the most of any upside and protect ourselves against any downside, and that's what our plan will continue to do. And I hope as credit investors, that is what you would expect us to be doing as a responsible management team.
John, if I can just add one thing, knowing Miguel and his background. Miguel, I think it's important to remember that the CAA is keen to introduce a traffic reserve mechanism, and that means that the main implication in terms of how quickly we recover to 2025 obviously is for passengers in terms of the level of charges. And therefore, I think that the recovery with a traffic reserve mechanism being implemented should be neutral for both creators as well as equity. But obviously I think that we are keen to recover traffic as quickly as possible. And even in the worst case scenario where traffic could take several years, we believe that the charge resulting from that delay traffic recovery is still perfectly affordable. So I think in terms of risk, obviously we are keen to recover as quickly as possible, but we don't expect to have major impact in terms of passenger charges, affordability, nor in terms of credit and equity.
Great. Thank you, Javier.
Okay. The next question is from Zaki Gay Wilkinson, who's asking, can you explain your traffic guidance for Q4 this year and why such an aggressive drop-off versus 2019?
Well, actually, in terms of Q4 of this year, all we're really saying is that at this stage, we think a reasonable mid-case is to that we'd return to the level that we had in our forecast before this latest update. And that's consistent with a view that a lot of the surge in demand that we've been seeing recently UK outbound leisure traffic, a lot of it people cashing in vouchers they've had from airlines for holidays they've not been able to take. You might know anecdotally that there's a lot of people who are heading off for city breaks a couple of times a month, going off on every conceivable family holiday that they can to make up for missed travel experiences. But that is going to come to an end at some point, which is why we see this as being a wave of pent-up demand that's going to wash through at some point. And we think it's going to hold through the summer. We have a lot of holidays and bank holidays coming up, a lot of weekends people will want to get away. But as we get into quarter four, we think we'll probably revert to what the underlying level of demand was. But we'll be updating this as we go along. We'll provide a further update in June at the investor report. And if our outlook changes, then we will update you on that then. Really, we just have to recognize there's a lot of, there's both risk and opportunity around this forecast, and a huge amount of uncertainty still remains.
The next question is, could you comment on how the summer capacity and the next winter capacity has evolved since the beginning of the year? How have they changed with the recent deterioration of the macro scenario, and how does the level bookings differ with 2019? Can you provide any detail on any incentive scheme you have in place?
Great. So let me pick that up. I think in terms of capacity, Heathrow is normally a full capacity in terms of air traffic movement. And what we can see is that airlines are keen to protect their slots at Heathrow. We've seen I think 15 or 16 passenger airlines who've come into Heathrow over the COVID period to take advantage of the flexibility on slot use. And they and others are waiting in the wings to take up any slots that do become available from incumbent operators. So that, I think, remains very strong. The two things that that are different, one is just an understanding of where demand is, and to some extent what the CAA's DfT slot rules will be for the winter season, which will really depend on what the outlook is as we come out of the summer and see whether see what kind of world faces us as we come into September. So I think the DfT is probably going to leave it quite late before they decide what the slot policy will be. You'll know that the winter season is typically weaker in terms of demand than the summer season, so we can't assume that the winter slot rules will be the same as they were for the summer. They could be better or they could be worse. The second aspect of capacity is the availability of people. At the moment, we are on peak days over Easter, we've been operating an airport with 80% on the busiest days of the demand that we've had pre-pandemic, with about 65% of the people. And that's because we are scaling up resources across the airport for the summer peak, but we haven't got back there yet. And if you've flown through Heathrow, I hope you will have had the same good experience that the vast majority of passengers have had, because even though we've had less resource, we've been managing the operation very tightly. Everyone has been helping out, including Javier and Sally and I, all been working in the terminals to get people through. And we'll continue to do the same over the summer. Some of the cancellations that we're seeing being made in advance by airlines is because they can see that they have an imbalance between the passenger demand and the resources they've got to fulfill that demand, not just in terms of planes, crews, and pilots, but also in terms of ground staff. And the particular vulnerabilities we've seen have been around baggage handlers and some of the ground crews involved in turning the planes around. And you can see that actually reflected in some of our operating performance, with lower departures punctuality over the first quarter, and actually lower departures punctuality than arrivals punctuality, which indicates that it's a resource issue on the ground, and also lower baggage connections levels than we would normally have. So So those will start to work through, but we are seeing airlines taking sensible moves to cancel planes in advance. And that that issue of resource on the ground has not been a capacity constraint historically at Heathrow, but is a function of the huge cuts that have been made in resourcing across aviation, including at Heathrow, over the last 2 years, and the need for us to rebuild capacity over the coming months. And so it's a bit too early to say whether that will still be a factor as we come out of the summer and come into the winter. But we're certainly encouraging our own business and all of the companies across Heathrow to get back to full capacity as soon as we can. And you'll have seen that there are some constraints that we face to doing that, including the speed at which we can get people cleared through all the security checks and trained up to come into work. And we're working with the government to see how we can speed up some of those. So I'm afraid it's a long answer, which you can probably boil down to. I don't entirely know yet, but we will share with you what we do know as soon as we can. In terms of some of the incentive plans, we have a range of incentive plans. Some of them were set during the COVID crisis, at the height of the crisis. Those tend to be focused on cost control, as you would expect. More recent ones tend to be focused more around EBITDA growth and underlying service scores, which will be more familiar and reflect a progressive return to business as usual.
Great. I have one more written question from Camilo Daco, who's asking, what's the estimate of the long-term impact of Brexit on your recovery to 2019 levels?
Oh, crikey, I haven't had a Brexit question in a long time. It's not one I can really answer at the moment. Will be, I think, really any Brexit impacts are being swamped by some of the bigger impacts we're seeing, COVID beyond anything still, and the government restrictions around the world related to COVID. But beyond that, some of the bigger macro trends of low GDP growth and high oil prices and war in the Ukraine are probably more dominant themes than Brexit. So you may not have heard this 2 years ago, but I have to say Brexit is the least of my worries at the moment.
And we just have one more question that came in from Jean-Etienne Pierre, who's asking, could you provide additional comments on the evolution of other income, which were down quarter to quarter?
Yes, I definitely can. In fact, better than me giving you an update on that, I will ask my friend Javier to give you an update on it.
Thank you, Jan. So I think we discussed in terms of other income. The main two components is other regulated charges and Heathrow Express. Heathrow Express continue performing very well. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we just lost you for a moment. Please
okay. Okay, so this is the issue of the life. So in terms of Heathrow Express performs very strongly. The other component, which is other regulated charges, I think what we had is we had a catch-up last year of recovery of prior years. So at the end in 2021, we were accelerating recovery of 2019 and 2020. And therefore, what we are seeing in 2022 is that the reversal of the one-off that we had in 2021. In terms of other regulated charges, I think it's a risk that the commercial team managed extraordinarily well in 2021, and at this stage, there are no major issues in terms of recovery. So it's a prior issue. It's a prior year issue.
Great. And so two thoughts on that. One is it shows how there are some revenue streams which give us some protection even in the downside and have helped us quite significantly through the worst periods of COVID. Second is that actually, although you might read in the newspapers about the tensions between Heathrow and our airlines around the H7 settlement, which is inevitable around a big negotiation, the reality is that on the ground and corporately, we have very close relationships with the airlines. We work well together on the things we can, and even things like other regulated charges, which are material cash flow for both of us, we have been able over the last couple of years to find a way through that which works for everyone. So I hope that will give you some comfort that in spite of the challenging discussions we will no doubt continue to have on H7, there's a lot of good collaboration happening with our airline partners across the rest of our business.
And as there are no further questions, I will hand it back to you, John, for closing comments.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much. Really good questions. And thank you for your engagement. If you do have any further questions, please do follow up with Sally and the team. They'd be very happy to help. The nature of the question shows that there's still a lot of uncertainty out there. I hope we've given you some comfort that we've managed the recovery well so far. We're also taking a prudent approach to the balance of the year to make sure that the investment that you have made in us is well protected and that we can recover successfully as the markets do return. But if you do get a chance to travel through Heathrow, please do. I hope you have a fantastic experience and that you will let me know whether you do or not. We are a service organization, and the only people who can tell whether we're really doing a good job or not are our passengers, and I hope that increasingly you will be among them. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
This concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.